Case number 18-5145 et al., American Great Lakes Ports Association et al. Appellant versus Carl L. Schultz in his official capacities as commanded, United States Coast Guard et al., Mr. Benner for the appellants, Ms. Lyons for the federal appellees, Mr. Longstreth for the intervener appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, I'm Jonathan Benner, appearing for appellants who are Great Lakes situated maritime businesses, ports, and vessel operators, all of whom are impacted by pilotage costs imposed by the United States Coast Guard. This is part of an annual rate-making exercise mandated by the Great Lakes Pilotage Act. This mandate directs the Coast Guard, while it's not particularly detailed in its instruction, it does say that the Coast Guard shall set these rates in consideration of the public interest and the cost of providing the service. As you've no doubt divined from the papers before you, this cause arises against a backdrop of a multi-year effort by ratepayers and other affected entities to really going back to the 2015 navigation season to try to grasp hold of this annual rate-making process and to impose some what they regard as fairness and regularity to the process by which the Coast Guard takes data and transforms this through a fairly elaborate formula into hourly rates that are paid by these ratepayers. We brought to this court three elements of the district court's disposition of the matter. Two of these are challenges, APA challenges, to the Coast Guard's determination about staffing levels. Staffing levels drive costs very heavily in the Coast Guard's formulation. This has been referred to in the papers as the peak staffing model that the Coast Guard imposed. Issues related to retention, attrition, recruitment, which also form the basis of the Coast Guard's determination of staffing levels. These two issues are somewhat related. They feed on each other. We also bring before the court an inadequacy of remedy issue that was raised by the district court's disposition of the weighting factor error that the district court found. This is a fairly glaring, obvious, avoidable deficiency, both in the proposed rule that the Coast Guard put out and in its final rule, in which the Coast Guard simply neglected, despite fairly vociferous, we believe, finger-pointing by us to the problem, an element of the rate calculation, which resulted in an arithmetic problem with the final rule. The arithmetic problem was that because the invoicing to the ratepayers includes a multiplier that's based on the size of the vessel, and that multiplier ranges anywhere from 1.0 up to 1.4, 1.45, and maybe 4.5.
Mr. Butter?
Yes, ma'am.
If you could say we were to agree with you as to that question, I mean, what remedy is available to us? I mean, that's a question that I have been thinking through. I mean, if we were to vacate the 2016 rate, as you would prefer, what is left for the agency to do? I mean, how do they impose a new rate without running afoul of the prohibition on retroactive rate making in Bowen and other cases?
Judge Rao, I think You're at the heart of probably what the discussion is going to be today. What is the remedy for this? We have proposed various remedies as this has progressed because over the course of getting this issue litigated, the backdrop has changed. I think the starting point for us on remedy is that the 2016 rates, which were established by the final rule that we contest, are no longer in effect. By the time the district court issued its first merits opinion on that, we had a proposed rule for the 2017 rates. By the time it issued its remedy order, the 2017 rates were in effect and the 2018 rates had been proposed. Right now we're operating under 2019 rates. So to come back directly to your question, what we have proposed is simply that given the effect of the weighting factor, which was essentially to confiscate money from the ratepayers and direct it to be transferred to the pilotage monopolies that the Coast Guard supervises, that at a minimum there should be clear direction to the agency to credit those excesses back. The agency itself has said that the calendar year 2016 overage is $5 million.
How does it credit those amounts back without effectively calculating what the rate should have been? Isn't that what they would have to do in order to determine the amount of what would need to be credited?
Yeah, I understand the question, Your Honor. It's an adjustment to the billing. It's not a reimposition of a new rate for 2016. The 2016 rates are dead. These are billing errors that the Coast Guard essentially ordered. And whether it's a refund or a credit, we say it can be either. The ratepayers, it's very easy to back out of the invoices. The invoices reflect a multiplication of, on average, 1.28 times the hourly billing rate. You divide out whatever the weighting factor error was, and you revise those invoices. If it's done by credit to ratepayers or it's done by refund is not particularly important to us. But if nothing is done, then we have a situation where we estimate in the neighborhood of $12 to $13 million was extracted from the ratepayers, directed to the pilots for no services rendered and on no cost basis. No costs were incurred by the pilots to gain that money. It was a windfall.
How does the credit work?
The credit would simply work that invoices for the 2016 period, and by the way, that period was attenuated. It ran all the way into the fall of 2017. But any invoices during the time when the 2016 rate was in effect should be revised to make that arithmetic correction, to correct the windfall. The money's gone from my clients, and we're saying that this is a statute that requires rate making based on cost. There's no underlying cost for that. No service was provided.
But I guess what I'm asking about how does the credit work is how mechanically is there a shift of money that gives you what I assume you're looking for?
Yes, I mean, either if it's a refund, there'd be a direct payment back. If it's credited, because the ratepayers here tend to be repetitive ratepayers, if there's a credit, they would have a credit
in future cycles,
going forward in future cycles, yes.
Mandated by the agency.
Yes. I mean, I'd be perfectly happy for the pilots to do this because they're good citizens, but I don't think at this stage we're going to see that happen.
And that doesn't pose a retroactivity problem?
I don't think it does. I mean, I think the prohibition against retroactive rate making does not apply in a situation where there's an effort to correct an obvious arithmetic error. We're not saying that the 2016 rates now have to be reestablished and reapplied. We're saying that the Coast Guard enabled a windfall that it should not have, and that we know exactly what it is. We can calculate it pretty accurately, and there should not be a system, Congress probably didn't contemplate a system, where this kind of government error goes unremedied, and where I don't understand.
But I'm missing something, because if you're not contemplating a reestablishment of rates for 2016, then what happens after a vacator? Because what you're asking for, the district court gave remand without vacator.
That's right.
You're saying there should have been a vacator.
We are.
But the way you want the vacator to work out is through a credit. But because then if there's a credit, then going forward at least you feel like you'll be made whole for amounts that we were deprived of with respect to 2016. But if there's a vacator of the 2016 rates, then there's nothing in place for 2016.
But there needn't be anything in place for 2016 at this point when we're operating under 2019 rates at this time. This is simply a look back and correction. The Coast Guard has, in its own regulations, we've cited them in our papers, the ability to order corrections of invoices.
Do that without a vacator?
Possibly they could.
I mean, that's what I'm just not understanding where the vacators fit into this, because if it's going forward.
Judge Srinivasan, our argument about vacator is that it is the sort of default or presumptive response to a finding of a non-lawful rule. Here we have a rule that had several moving parts. We did not ask for review by this tribunal of the other element of the rule that the district court found unlawful. But we believe that the district court overanalyzed or over-relied on the disruption prong of Allied Signal to decide not to vacate. I suppose that if the remand order is clear enough, and I think the district court thought it was, that the Coast Guard was going to do something about this and that there would be a remedy, the remedy would occur whether there was a vacator or not. We still believe that vacator was appropriate, and we don't believe it has the disruptive effects that the district court feared. This is what we're arguing on vacator. Or we believe that the district court had the authority, as Allied Signal said, to cut out that which was excessive in the disposition of our APA challenges and address those directly without moving the whole rule into as a nullity. I'm not sure though that it makes any difference whatsoever other than in the abstract as to whether given the applicability of the 2019 rates now, whether the 2016 rates are in place or not.
As a practical matter, since the rate making occurs annually, right?
Yes.
You know, each new rate is put in place, and that rate would probably expire before judicial review runs out over the rate. I mean, in most instances, right, between the district court and if there's appeal. So would you anticipate this happening? You know, each year it seems historically one side or the other is unhappy with the rate. So do we have a system where we have these appeals and then the agency has to continually correct and reallocate and adjust invoices when there are errors? And how do you envision that working practically?
It's something that we're in the midst of, so as you have discerned. But it's a relatively recent phenomenon that these rates are being challenged. What's happened is there's been substantial increase in the costs that have motivated the need for litigation. I certainly wouldn't expect this to occur, but you're correct, Your Honor. We're on something of a conveyor here because of this annual rate making. And one of the reasons the 2016 rule draws our attention at this level is that its assumptions and conclusions carry over into each new rule, and if we don't get a grip on it now, it becomes something that's subject to repetition but evades review.
That is another question I had. If we were to vacate the 2016 rule, how would that impact the subsequent rules, 2017 through 2019? Does it undermine those rules? Since you say there's a logic in the 2016 rule that's carried forward?
No, I think in terms of the rules themselves, as opposed to issues that may be raised by discussion and comments or discussion and supplemental information in the rule, the rules the rules stand on their own 2 feet. The pilots challenged the 2017 rule because of a provision relating to expensing of attorney's fees.
So given some of the objections raised by the agency in light of Allied Signal and the district court's reliance on disruption, as a practical matter, if I had paid $500 too much, do you see me as getting a credit toward the 217, 218, 219 rate? That's how it would work? You wouldn't go back to the original recipient of the extra 500, the pilot?
Well, Your Honor, the money has changed hands from the rate payers to...
Where is the money?
The money is in the pilot's hands.
I know. So that's my point. And the agency says, well, the pilot may have spent the money, et cetera. So it's not as though it could go back to the pilot, as I understand the agency's position, or it would be too difficult to do that. But all the questions that Judge Rao is raising, it seems to me, come up. And we see this all the time in other agencies where Congress has specifically authorized the agency to grant refunds, make corrections. Now, you refer to the agency's authority to correct invoices. And you think that's broad enough to cover the type of credit refund remedy you're seeking? Is that your argument?
Yes, because the invoice reflects a weighting factor multiplier that was not contemplated by the rule itself. And so, I mean, it seems glaringly obvious that the Coast Guard should have considered that. It seemed that way to the district court, I think. But the Coast Guard has that authority. The Coast Guard also, the courts have the authority to remand in a way that requires an effective remedy. But getting to the initial part of your question, hypothetically, the ratepayer pays $500. We've couched this as a refund or a credit. The credit to us seemed to address a convenience issue for the pilots. What we are trying to avoid, though, and we do not think a cost-based rate-setting system permits, is for that money just to be sunk, for that money just to be lost.
I understand that, but the pilot, let's assume I received the $500 and I've spent it. So are you saying that in 2019 I would not get whatever it is, $700, I would only get $200 because I had that extra $500 earlier? Is that the way you contemplate this? This is just a bookkeeping calculation.
The calculation, yes, is just arithmetic. And indeed, our credit proposal is simply that ratepayers, and by the way, one of the things we're trying to do is to ensure that the people receiving redress here are the people who paid the rates.
No, I understand that. Assuming that can be demonstrated, and if you can't demonstrate it, then that's another issue. But that's not the agency's objection, as I understand it.
Well, the agency's objection, I think, is it's too hard.
Well, it's burdensome.
It's a burden. But it's a burden to take millions of dollars, and we believe the number is somewhere in the range of $10 to $15 million.
So the rule
and just transfer it.
Is that the authority to correct invoices is sufficiently expansive to authorize the agency to come up with a refund credit remedy?
Yes, Your Honor. And regardless of that authority, we say that the reviewing courts, in light of the APA violation, have every right to direct the Coast Guard to provide an effective remedy. What happened here is...
To do what?
To provide an effective remedy. The district court sent this back. The district court said... it's best to leave it to the agency in the first instance. Excuse me, Your Honor.
And send it back as to the future.
Well, it's not clear The district court, what our issue with the district court on the remedy is that it offered an essentially ineffectual remedy. The Coast Guard did nothing. The Coast Guard's response to this.
But it isn't. I thought what Judge Rogers is asking you, I think, is that if we focus on the credit part of your suggested way to resolve this, then what would happen is if you think it's $10 to $15 million that was shifted over to the pilots that shouldn't have been shifted over to the pilots, then what you would see as the appropriate way to resolve this by way of credit would be in the future there would be $10 to $15 million that would otherwise go to the pilots that would not be charged to the shippers.
That's
right?
Correct.
You just
That's
make up
correct.
For it in the future. So it would be a shift back.
That's correct.
It's just that temporarily it wouldn't be go back to the pilots and say, hey, fork over $10 to $15 million that you shouldn't have gotten for 2016. It would be forego $10 to $15 million that you would otherwise get for 2020 because that's the amount that you got in 2016 that you shouldn't have.
Yes, we have no legal qualms about suggesting to the court that it should be a refund. We've offered this alternatively, though, because we understand that there are convenience issues involved that may suggest a credit. But we keep coming back to the point, how can it be to let stand that this error simply transferred these substantial funds with no provision of service and no cost incurred? The statute does not contemplate that.
All right. Why don't we hear from the agency?
All right. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Jane Lyons. I'm from the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I'm here on behalf of the Coast Guard. May it please the court. The district court found that the Coast Guard's rate methodology adopted in 2016 was generally sound. The Coast Guard here did not face, based on the district court's finding that two aspects of the rule were not sufficiently justified, they did not face what my friend on the other side has characterized as an arithmetic problem. At the very least, it's an algebra problem. And I hate to go to math quickly, but there we are. This is not a simple problem that could be quickly remedied. As Judge Rao pointed out early in the argument, the correct rate would have to be found in order to do these adjustments to the billing invoices, as has been suggested, and that is not a simple matter.
Why not?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Why not?
Why not? The first thing the district court found was that using the Canadian pilot base rate with a 10% increment had not been sufficiently justified to account for the difference between the Canadians being government employees and the pilots not being. So rates as high as 35% had been recommended or suggested in some of the comments the Coast Guard had received. So it's possible that in fixing that problem, if they had to go back, that rate might go up, and it's impossible to see how the offsetting effect of accounting for the weight factors and this problem, how that would mathematically work out.
Wouldn't that happen any time an agency has to correct an invoice? It's saying this invoice is in error.
Well, no, and that gets to the nature of the judicial power in APA review.
In other words, I understand how you want to characterize this, but I'm not sure that's dispositive, whether it's calculus or
arithmetic or algebra. Yeah. At the very least, I think we can agree it isn't very easy on its face because if...
we don't know. I mean, I understand the agency every year has to come up with these calculations, so it knows how to do it.
Well, it knows how it's doing it now, and that's an interesting point.
How it has the records for how it was doing it in 2016, or for 2016.
Yes, it does.
I'm not suggesting it's as simple as adding one and two together, but it's not an impossible task.
Oh,
it has to do this, and Congress has authorized it to do it.
Congress has authorized it to make a new rate every year. Congress has not authorized a retroactive rate to be imposed.
But again, you're putting labels on things. And I just want to be clear that that's the way the court should view it, because hypothetically, suppose the agency acknowledges the 2016 rates were 20% too high. So everybody gets a 20% credit going forward, equal to whatever that 20% is in dollars and cents.
So I think what the district court correctly recognized here is that there are a variety of ways in which the agency could decide to implement that sort of a correction.
Yeah.
It might be, perhaps, overly onerous to do it in a single year, and so you might phase that in over
right.
3 years or something.
Right.
And because there is an annual rate making, and because there's a federal advisory group that gives the agency input that it has to take account of, and because it has the benefit of viewpoints from the different constituencies, it is a measured but meaningful remedy to tell the agency to go forward and do whatever it wants to do on a prospective basis.
Regardless of the fact that I'm out $500.
It's not clear that you are out $500, and I do disagree with my friend on the other side's suggestion that no services were provided for those instances. The transportation took place. The pilot was there. There is a possibility that the rate was higher than it would have been if the Coast Guard had done everything properly. If I may just...
Can I ask this? So in 2017, you corrected the weighting issue, right, going to the Coast
after,
Guard?
After 2016, they corrected
right,
the weighting
right.
issue.
So,
can I offer a brief perspective on that issue? It's not as glaringly obvious as it has been portrayed. The Coast Guard changed the way it calculated base rates in 2016. Historically, it had been applying weighting factors for many years, and in fact, historically, they had been below one. So they would have reduced the rates if that had still been the case. By the time of 2016, they had not. They'd stopped using rates below one.
Okay, let me just ask this question. So suppose that it's commonly understood, and you may disagree with the premise, but let's just bear with me on the hypothetical. Let's just suppose that it's commonly understood that the rates were too high in 2016 because of a failure to take account of weighting.
Okay.
And then let's also suppose that however difficult it is, somebody could go back and redo the calculations to decide, oh, if we had taken into account weighting, then here's what the rates would have been, and here's what would have been paid over. Might be difficult to do, but let's just say that you can do that.
Okay.
Then, in your view, does the Coast Guard have discretion, not whether they should be mandated to do it, but do they have discretion going forward to say, okay, now we've done that, we realized that the weighting wasn't taken into account, it should have been, we've also done all the calculations to figure out what a difference that would have made. You know, they say $10 to $15 million. Maybe the Coast Guard says, no, it's like $2 million. I don't know, but let's just whatever the Coast Guard comes up with. And then they say, well, here's what we're going to do. Now we see that actually the shippers were charged $2 million too much. And what we're going to do is we're going to effectuate that going forward by starting in 2019 or 2020. And you could do it over 3 years, as you say. But somehow we're going to make up for that $2 million by reducing the rates on the proportionally appropriate basis to achieve rough equity.
Yes, absolutely.
There is
discretion in the rate making, and there's the last step of the eight or so step formula
right.
provides for that exactly that type of adjustment on the Coast Guard's discretion, and that's exactly how it should be taken account of, and it is. To Judge Rao's point about this sort of what happens then, is there more litigation? Yes, but what we don't have, the alternative is to have this case stay open and recycle annually, and instead what you have is a more crisply, you have a new agency action to be challenged on the basis of the record at that time and a new exercise of discretion, and I think that's a better outcome.
And the new agency action is triggered how?
The new rate making, in which the Coast Guard either applies the discretion, somebody's going to sue, let's just assume that, when they exercise their discretion in that fashion. If the shippers say it should have been $15 million and you only took account of two, they'll sue. And if the pilots are unhappy, they'll sue.
But what's going to spur the Coast Guard to take account of it at all going forward?
Well, a couple of things. could be the advisory committee makes recommendations to do that based on the district court's decision. I mean, the district, let's remember here, the Coast Guard acted on the weighting factors issue before the district court employed any remedy at all.
For 2017.
They went right out in April, put out a supplemental notice of proposed rulemaking and said, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to go forward.
And what if the Coast Guard doesn't? Let's say, is there an action that can be brought to compel the Coast Guard to take it into account? If your objection is, this shouldn't be done under the auspices of this litigation, but it can be something that the Coast Guard takes into account going forward.
Right.
And the shippers say, it's 2024, we're still owed money for 2016 the way we calculate it. You guys keep talking about potentially doing something, you haven't done anything. What then?
They could bring, as they have, their pending actions in the district court about the 2018 and the 2019 rulemaking. They can bring an action for agency action unreasonably delayed, for example. That's a claim under the APA. But they're not going to even need to use that because they will have made comments to the notice of proposed rulemaking, and when the final rule comes out, if it's arbitrary and capricious for the agency not to have acted appropriately, then that in the ordinary course.
What statutory authority does the Coast Guard have to take into account, you know, say a miscalculation in the past and apply it to, you know, shippers and pilots in the future, which may or may not be the same? You know, I understand there are a lot of repeat players, but they may be some different players. I mean, what statutory authority do they have to take something from the past and implement that in the rates going forward?
Inherent in the rate-making function generally is some discretion. In this particular scheme, costs is the driver in the statute.
But it's not the cost of what's actually happening.
But it's a past cost that might need to be considered. I believe that would be within the agency's discretion. And actually, your question, it's important to remember.
So you would put it under the cost prong because they have to look at the public interest and the costs.
Yes.
You would think it's part of the costs.
Yes, Your Honor.
Even though there are two sets of private entities which may not be identical in the future rate making.
Yes. So what you're saying is that it's possible that pilots working in 2020, who perhaps were not even working in 2016, would be suffering a lower rate than they might otherwise be getting.
Right.
Yes, that is possible and part of being in a regulated
community. And you think the Coast Guard has the authority to do that? I mean, because that won't be the actual costs of that year.
Yes, the statute doesn't talk in terms of setting a rate that is limited to costs for that year. The statute's not that specific. It's perhaps inherent, and it might make an interesting challenge. This is not something I've thought through totally or had an opportunity to talk to the Coast Guard about.
I would like to say
one more thing about your question, though, and it's this. If it were to pass that the Coast Guard were to say, we're going to impose this, we're going to take money away from pilots and force it, I'm not even sure they have the authority to do this, but to order those payments to shift that way, I'm not really aware of Coast Guard authority to do that.
I'm wondering if they have authority to do either one, maybe.
It's possible that they don't have, I think they probably have authority to make some account for it in a rate making. It would be better. And I think it would be better if it were sooner, right? So if the litigation happens and the district court gives direction, as happened here, and then the Coast Guard does what it thinks is appropriate as quickly as it can, that's the best outcome. And that's what we have here. We have meaningful direction and just insight that they gained from the litigation that caused the agency to act. It may not be in a way that completely pleases either party.
I mean, I assume this happens that in a rate-making capacity, some commenter will come in and say, you know, there's something that just hasn't been taken into account that's been going on for years.
Right.
And then the agency will then say, all right, well, we need to take that into account, and we'll take it into account going forward.
Yeah.
This just happens to be more, it's a discrete instance of something that happened within the confines of a particular 12-month period. And then there would be the ability on the part of the agency, not the mandatory obligation, but the discretionary ability on the part of the agency to take that into account and then offset it by things that you raised.
Or not. Or decide not to. And the closest case I can point you to.
As long as it's reasoned decision-making not to do
it. Right. And this court has held in a similar kind of context that doing so without notice and comment procedures was even available to the agency. And that's Methodist Hospital of Sacramento versus Shalala, 38 F. 2nd, 1225. It's a decision from this court in 94 that addresses that issue, that said it was basically reasonable to adopt, somewhat by implication, a policy of not imposing the retroactive correctiveness. And maybe it was out of the concerns that you're expressing, Judge Rao. So that's the closest case I can point you to on this. Court has no further questions. We'd ask that the district court affirmed.
We hear from counsel for intervener.
Thank you, Your Honors, and I know you've been through a lot, so I'll just make a few quick points, mostly just, I think, kind of correct thoughts on what's going on. First of all, to start with the question of statutory authority, I think that is an issue, and I think, Judge Roberts, you pointed out some statutes specifically provide for that authority. FERC is one. Under the Federal Power Act, for a long time, they couldn't order refunds. There's specific statutory authority. You have to give notice. There's a refund effective date. It used to be 60 days, then it's not. That's exactly the kind of statutory authority we don't have here to go back. And the Coast Guard has taken the position, the government counsel, you know, in response to the questions about discretion. I understand she doesn't want to give up her agency's discretion, but I think she kind of wound up being agnostic on whether they have that authority. I don't think they do, and the Coast Guard certainly in the past has taken the position they don't have that authority.
Counsel, you heard her. She wasn't agnostic.
Yeah.
She said she thought.
Well, then she said she hadn't really thought it through and she wasn't speaking with the Coast Guard. I can tell you that when we raised this issue in the 2014 rate, and that was a very different case because that really was, there was sort of a formula and they did it. We raised that issue. The Coast Guard definitely took the position they did not have the authority to go back and order refunds. We had a refund hearing in front of Judge Chutkan. She didn't seem all that anxious to wade into the issue, and so we settled out.
Well, there's a difference between a refund in the past and also taking into account, you know, what's happened in the past in future rate makings. Do you think the Coast Guard has the authority to do
that? Yeah, I think that's right, and I think this case provides a good example of, I think, first of all, just to correct an error, and it appears in the appellant's briefs, Judge Contreras did not find that they were overcharged. As a matter of fact, when they kept arguing that he found they overcharged, he specifically said in his remedy hearing, no, they're misunderstanding my argument. I just said they had to consider the weighting factors. They could have come back and kept the rate in place. They could have kept it higher. They could have kept it lower. But this notion that he found an overcharge that's unremedied isn't completely inconsistent with his ruling. He specifically said that hadn't happened. They could have come back and said, yes, we were right not to consider the weighting factors in 2016. And I think it kind of goes a little bit to Judge Rao's point. One of the reasons I think they did that, and it goes to this kind of taking into account of past history. I mean, I think Judge Chenevesen did that. Any agency can take account what's been going on. The weighting factors issue was presented in the 2016 rate. The industry came in and said, look, you should take these into account in projecting revenues, and therefore you should lower the rates. And the agency's looking at a situation where they needed to raise the rates for all the reasons that the Coast Guard said that were amply supported and that Judge Contreras found were actually supported, and we need to have more pilots. And we're a little bit worried because when we've been projecting revenues in the past, we've over-projected. The revenues have come in lower. Year after year after year, the revenues have come in lower. So you're telling us now, industry, we should lower the rates because we should change the projections to project higher revenues from this, but that hasn't been our experience. So you may have a point, we'll look at it for a year, and then we'll change it, which is what they did. And that was their understanding. That was how they kind of took it into account going forward. Faced with it in 2016 with a history of over-projecting revenues, they were reluctant to reduce their projection of they were reluctant to increase their projection of revenues, but they didn't want to fix it then. They wanted to fix it after they had the experience in 2016. They had the experience in 2016. They changed it going forward. And I guess this gets to the last point I want to make, and I think it goes again to Judge Rao's statement, where you've got this endless loop where every year you're litigating the rate, and then you're going back and settling, you know, upsetting settled invoices, which is not the way the filed rate doctrine works. It's not the way that rules that were in place work. That's just never been the way it's been done. You know, we were underpaid for many years. We didn't go back and say, hey, you projected revenues of X. The revenues came in at 90% of X. Here, industry, here's your bill for the 10%. We went back into the next rating and next rulemaking and said, look, you've been underprojecting revenues. Fix it this time. And then ultimately, finally in 2016, they fixed it. Finally, we got a decent rate increase, and of course, the rest is history. They've been litigating every rate since then.
Can I just ask, are there any efforts for legislative change to the statutory scheme?
The only recent legislative change was the change that required the rates to be set every year, and that was in 2005, and that was actually the result of litigation because the agency had been delaying rate increases for so long that finally Congress said, look, you've got to do this every year so that you can keep up.
And
of course, what that all...
I'm sorry?
That was in 2005. And of course, that's one of the reasons we had the big rate increases that they keep complaining about is they were so low for many years because the Coast Guard never got around to the change. Now we've got to have a change every year, and I think that allows you to sort of fix the problems. If the industry identifies a problem, they identify a problem, it can then be taken into account in the rate going forward. But we've never had a circumstance, and Judge Contreras found this in the Trump, we've never had a situation where when that's fixed going forward, we then go back and upset all the invoices that have been issued before.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, counsel for petitioner.
I would first like to address my friend Mr. Longstreth's point about the history of this. Since 2015, every year, the Coast Guard's projected revenue figures have been exceeded by the actuals by significant percentages. On average, over the whole period, it's been 30%. We're from the ratepayers see this, and the affected businesses see this exactly from the other end of the telescope on that. This is what we have is a system that routinely overgenerates revenue by significant amounts and has year after year after year since 2015. That explains in part why we're in this period of litigation. The ratepayers prior to attacking this 2016 rule had not actively litigated these things. I don't want the court to walk away with the opinion that it's inevitable that there's always going to be one side or the other fussing about this and the agency is just stuck in the middle. The pilotage costs are now the highest single cost for a vessel operator once the vessel comes into the lakes. These pilotage costs have risen by double-digit percentages, and they're completely out of phase with the Canadian pilots' costs. So this is a problem that we'll have to constantly address. Going back to the issue of remedy, the Coast Guard knew when it issued its supplemental notice proposed rulemaking in the spring, April of 2017. It had a year-end financial picture of what the 2016 rates had done, and they said, you're right. They didn't say you're right. They said they have overproduced by roughly 28%, which is exactly what we predicted because of the arithmetic certainty of the error. We knew what the average weighting factor was. We knew that the Coast Guard didn't account for it. The Coast Guard did nothing. They could have, while the rates were still in effect, the Coast Guard could have done something. The rates were still in effect then. They remained in effect for almost an entire additional navigation season. The Coast Guard did nothing. The Coast Guard did nothing on the remand from the district court to address this in terms of a remedy. Judge Contreras told them that we'll give you the first shot at this remedy, and nothing came back. In fact, the silence while our 60-day clock was ticking on the appeal was why we're here before you today. They were going to do nothing about it. Approximately $10 to $15 million has transferred, and I would take issue with Ms. Lyon's statement. A service wasn't provided for this. This is just a tax, essentially. It's not a cost-based amount. It is an arithmetic error. The Coast Guard has authority to change this either because the court directs them to do so by providing an effectual remedy, or because it has inherent authority in its own regs to adjust these past invoices. My time has expired. I would, with the indulgence of the court, just like to say we have also raised two elements that we've not addressed here today. These are briefed. Particularly, though, I would draw the court's attention to the fact that there is a detailed Coast Guard study in the appendix, JA-476, that we believe was the best empirical data the Coast Guard had available to it, and it did not follow it. And we would ask that attention be paid to that.
Thank you. I'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honors.